Cue the fancy intro music. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and this is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom helps you end the hustle, define success on your own terms, and build a profitable, sustainable business doing more of what you love and less of what you don't. I'm so excited you're here with me today. Let's get started.
This was a weird, whirlwindy week for me. I spent part of the week in California at a conference and then hopped a red eye to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. It was pretty busy. So I'm not technically on the road as I record this, but I went coast to coast this week, so I figure that deserved a mention. There were some raging forest fires in the mountains near Marina Del Rey where I was staying. And I hadn't been to Washington, D.C. since our short-lived driving tour of the city when I was a kid. Mom had this wild idea to hit the East Coast, where we visited Annapolis and Atlantic City. And on our way through D.C., Mom was so freaked out by the traffic that she ran a couple of red lights just to get out of town faster. She was stopped. She's like, yep, there's D.C. Let's go. This time around, though, D.C. was between congressional sessions, so there was hardly any traffic at all. And I walked around exploring Capitol Hill, had my first taste of what might become my new favorite dessert, semifreddo. Oh my, yummy. Good stuff. The whirlwind tour also gave me a look at pricing in different parts of our country. The pricing in LA and DC for the exact same items were dramatically different. And even comparable items in different shops were priced markedly differently. Now, that's not unusual. But think about it. Why can one company charge $6 for a cup of coffee with some whipped cream, but your local diner is lucky if they can get $2 for it? Why can one restaurant charge $20 for a steak when another charges $200 for the same cut of beef? How can Wu-Tang Clan charge millions of dollars for a single copy of their album? What are they thinking trying to charge those prices? And not just thinking about it, but actually charging those prices and getting them. This week we're talking about pricing, but I'm coming at it from a different angle. If you've read Creative Freedom, then you know that I believe firmly that mindset is more important than mastery. And nowhere is mindset more important than in your pricing. Folks who consistently have buyers for their higher priced offers have created a space in their market where their audience craves what they have and is willing to pay for the privilege of buying from them. They are happy to make the investment and often evangelize to their colleagues, family, and friends about the investment they've made. Now, I know some of you out there are already scoffing at paying those outrageous prices for anything. Yeah, that was me once. Didn't want to pay for anything. It's too much. Why would anybody charge that kind of money? But here's the reality. We still operate in a capitalist society, and there are plenty of people out there willing to charge those premium rates. And if you're limping along, maybe it's time to pay attention to how they're doing it. Now, that doesn't mean you have to raise your rates to the stratosphere. But if you want to have profitability and sustainability, you have to learn how to work within the existing system so that you can survive long enough to change it. Tough love, I know. And important clarity to have in business today. The world won't just change because you want it to, because you want to help people, so you're going to charge less. No, you'll just keep working harder and harder without the resources that you need to do your best work. So this mindset shift is akin to knowing the rules so that you can break them. I never could have built the Creative Freedom Incubator without learning how to create something profitable and sustainable for myself first. Then I can go in and change the system. So if you learned nothing else today, and I hope you do learn a lot, I want to drill into your head the idea that your time is precious. It's the one resource you can never replenish. When the day is done, that's it. Your unused or wasted minutes don't roll over to the next day, ever. So while I'm talking about pricing, this is less about the specific prices you set on your offers and more about the mindset that you need in order to see your pricing clearly and stand by it when people question it. When I first started coaching, I began charging $500 an hour for my sessions and encouraged my clients to see their time as worth $500 an hour as well. Why? Because if you don't believe your time is worth that, then you'll be pretty hard-pressed to ever earn that. Oh, but Lisa, I don't need to make $500 an hour. I can make $100 an hour and be quite happy.
Yeah, I hear you say that. But have you done the math? In order to make $100,000, you'd need to work 1,000 hours in a year. That's a little over 83 hours a month. 2 40-hour work weeks, and then you'd have the rest of the month off, right? No. Let's be realistic. That's 1,000 billable hours. 83 client sessions in a month if you're a coach. And how are you going to fill your calendar with 83 clients a month? If you're lucky enough to have clients that come in every week, that's just over 20 clients you'd need to have regularly. Now, I've been a coach for 10 years, and I've never in my life seen 20 clients every single week. That also doesn't count any of the time that it takes to do your bookkeeping, your client notes, email follow-ups, or any other marketing, business work, etc. Oh, and then you got to pay your taxes and maybe hire some help with some of that. So your $100,000 quickly dwindles to about $40,000 in realized income. Maybe. Probably less, especially if you want to take a training course or hire a coach or attend a workshop somewhere. So maybe it's more like $25,000 a year. And perhaps you can thrive on $25,000. And maybe you can't, because according to the Zipia living wage map at the time I'm recording this, the lowest living wage in the United States is about $43,000 in Kentucky. According to MIT's living wage calculator, which I'll link to in the show notes, it's Mississippi at just under $42,000. So that's only half of a living wage at $100 an hour. But at $500 an hour, now you need about 17 client sessions a month to earn that $100,000. That's about 4 regular weekly clients, with plenty of breathing room in your calendar to take on a pro bono or a sliding scale client. Or if you're an artist, to just open up your calendar to do more of your creative work. That's selling 1 or 2 pieces of art a month instead of trying to hustle on Redbubble or some aggregate site selling your art on throw pillows. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a hard way to make money consistently. Again, $500 an hour gives you plenty of time and breathing room to do other things, and you can afford to be more generous. And if you did manage to fill your calendar with 83 clients a month at $500 an hour, you'd be making nearly $500,000 a year. Plenty of money to be able to hire a team to support the growth of your business and give you the breathing room you need to focus on what really matters in your life, not just your business. Remember in our last episode where I talked about the differences between Walmart.com and Tiffany.com? That to me is a pretty wide-ranging scale that we can use as our foundation in this episode. Walmart is a general goods retailer that competes in the marketplace by having the lowest prices. That's their brand promise. Tiffany, on the other hand, couldn't care less about being the lowest cost option. They are a luxury brand, and their brand promise is about the prestige of the brand. Naturally, these companies have 2 distinctly different pricing mythologies, and that's your starting point for pricing, your pricing mythology. And when I say mythology, I mean the stories and legends that make up your company or your brand. As a creative entrepreneur, you've got an origin story. You've probably got a few other brand stories too. Your pricing mythology is the story or stories around why you've priced your products the way you do. It's part of your marketing and the justification that your audience considers when they're making a buying decision. This is the primary reason a company like Starbucks can charge a premium price for coffee when you can pick up a comparable beverage at McDonald's for substantially less. The largest McDonald's frappe is still less than the smallest Starbucks frappuccino. You've been programmed through marketing and pricing mythology about what you can expect when you shop at the Golden Arches and how the shopping experience is supposedly different from shopping at Starbucks. Remember, you train people how to treat you through what they've come to expect from you and what you've come to accept from them. So in theory, the service quality and overall experience at one of these establishments is significantly higher or better than the other. Or at least that's what their marketing would lead you to believe. And because it's perceived to be higher quality, it's priced higher.
But here's the thing. I pull up to a drive-thru, order a drink, make a payment, I get my drink, and go. It's the exact same experience at both locations. Now, maybe if I pay with my gold card at Starbucks, they'll call me by my name as I drive away. But otherwise, it's the exact same experience. Now, are there some people who will still gromp about paying higher prices at Starbucks? Sure. And they're typically not one of Starbucks' raving fans. Remember, you're marketing to and for your raving fans, not for everyone with a pulse. Because everyone with a pulse will never come into your store. Well, some of them might come into your store once, but it's those repeat buyers who rave about you to their friends and family that keep you in business. What are they saying? What kind of an experience are you creating for them? McDonald's has tried their hand at loyalty rewards before, but no one does it like Starbucks. And each time Starbucks tweaks the reward system, they lose a few fans. But their raving fans just shrug and keep buying. Brainwashed? Maybe. And yet, buyers want what they want until they're educated otherwise. Now, a word of caution here. Marketing and pricing mythologies are rooted in perception, which isn't always reality. If you can tell a compelling story about why you elect to charge 2 to 10 times the going rate for your product or service, and you can collect that money, then get on down the road with your bad self. I'll also caution you about price gouging, but we all know that if there's a market where you can name your own price, most people will set it as high as possible and then watch it come down over time. Apple is consistently priced higher than most other electronics manufacturers. There are plenty of computers that cost about half the price of a MacBook Pro and work just as well. But there are hordes of raving Apple fans that would disagree. Well, nothing compares to Apple, they'll say. Apple has the patents, they'll say. Yeah, but if I can invest $1,500 in a new laptop instead of $3,000 and get everything I want and need, I'll take a pass on Apple, thanks. But that's me. I've never bought into the prestige of buying Apple. Which is odd because prestige is one of my triggers, one of my fascination advantages. In reality, though, I'm an open source gal. I want to live in a world where we share resources and knowledge as openly as possible and we're still able to pay the bills. Google, the parent company of Android, posted a $30 billion profit in 2018, while Apple posted roughly a $60 billion profit. That's a heck of a lot of money. I don't care who you are. And it's unlikely that you as a creative entrepreneur will rake in that much dough in a single year. Still, it's important to note the differences in the audience that prefer Apple to Android. Apple's mythology is built around connecting people through ease of use, visual appeal, and a focus on form. Apple products have a certain look and feel. They have a certain interface, that simplicity of form and function. It's appealing to both linear creatives who like the ease of function and also to chaotic creatives who want that quality of experience. Android devices have all kinds of looks and feels because it's not about the form, it's about the tech. It's attractive to a different audience, one that cares less about the form and more about the function. When you look at your offers, look at the form and function. Consider who would get the best results or the most enjoyment out of what you offer. If you're an artist that travels to vineyards and paints landscapes and prints to sell in the vineyard gift shop, your audience is wine lovers with enough money to not only afford to have vineyard experiences, but also want to take a piece of that experience home with them. So your pricing will be different than an artist who sketches caricatures at the county fair. Now, in addition to your pricing mythology, then, is the audience to whom you are selling. Remember, a $75,000 chandelier at Walmart might seem excessive, but at Tiffany, it's probably a clearance sale item. So it pays to research your audience, because the more you know about them, the easier it is to speak their language and reach them in ways that inspire them to say yes to you. Pricing has other considerations as well. Just because you can charge $1,000 an hour doesn't mean you should. Maybe you should charge more or less. One colleague of mine shifted his entire business model when he realized that he had plenty of money and wanted to help more people. Now, even though he could easily make tens of thousands of dollars working with elite business owners, he shifted his attention to an underserved market. That market needs his insights and can't afford a hefty price tag, and it has nothing to do with supply and demand, except that his own financial supply was sufficient. He'd reached his own enoughness number, and he was ready to help others do the same. I tell my clients regularly, when you charge more, you can afford to be more generous. That's not an invitation to jack their prices to the stratosphere. Rather, it's a reminder that once they've met their enoughness number, once they've found pricing that supports them, they can reach back and support others. Is that a little woo-woo or karmic? Yeah, perhaps. Still, I know that none of us got to where we are entirely on our own. Being self-made is a freaking myth. I did a whole episode on it. We all needed the help of someone somewhere along the way. And the minute we forget that, we become part of the problem of our economic machine instead of the solution. Businesses exist not just to make a profit, but also to serve an audience. Never forget that. If your business doesn't serve an audience, you won't sell a damn thing and you won't be in business for very long. So where does the audience of your business fall on this pricing spectrum? Do you have multiple audiences? As a musician, I serve an audience that enjoys my particular style of music. As a business coach, I work with clients who are in the early struggle phase of building their business. They have a certain set of needs and income limits, so I can only offer them so much. But I can offer them plenty to take them out of struggle and into fun. Once they get into fun, most of the time they graduate and go on with their lives because they think they've got things handled. And for a while, they probably do. But then the business starts to grow to a point where it's unmanageable again, and they hit whitewater. That's a critical point in the business where decisions need to be made about scaling up or steadying the growth. It's also a time when old ways don't work anymore and you need a third party to look at things and offer insights. That's the other audience I serve when things get hard again. Now, those two audiences have different needs and different income levels, so I charge differently even if the services appear to be the same. Remember the last episode when I said that the what also includes your pricing? This is an example from my own business. In early struggle, there's one goal: get out of it as fast as possible. You do that by finding a market big enough to keep the business profitable and sustainable. Now, enough is a relative term that depends on a number of factors in your business, and we'll get to that in a minute. In early struggle, the questions and problems are pretty common and stem from either a mindset issue or a resource issue. Solve the problem, get results, because they're easier problems to solve. And because they're easier problems to solve, I don't need to charge as much to work with clients in early struggle. But whitewater, whoo, it's all about complexity. Like trying to untangle a jewelry box full of necklaces that have knotted up on one another. Whitewater isn't just solving a resource or mindset issue. It is that, yes, but it's also dealing with complexities of growing a business, setting up systems and processes that actually support the business, and freeing up your business owner so that they're not the bottleneck in the business, among other things. And because that's more complicated, I charge more for that. Even if I'm offering coaching or consulting as the thing, the pricing is different because of the nuances of that particular audience. That's also why each client in my incubator has custom contract pricing. No two people are paying the exact same rate, even if I'm offering them the exact same services on paper, because how it looks on paper is rarely how it plays out in real life. Chaotics are much more particular about outcomes and details. That has an inherent cost in my business. Linears are much more focused on deadlines, which also has a tangible cost to it. Fusions can be flexible until you hit a spot where they simply don't compromise. Now again, different audiences have different needs, and to be able to meet them where they are, my pricing adjusts accordingly. Someone who's been in business for several years, bringing in four figures a month already, will likely pay a higher retainer than someone with an unproven idea they haven't brought to market yet. And if you pay a higher retainer, you pay a lower back-end percentage. That's how the incubator works. It's sliding scale based on factors that are specific to your business situation. Do you see now why pricing can be so confusing and frustrating for creatives? It's not just about the amount of supplies and the time that goes into your offer. I know that wholesalers talk about keystone pricing, basically double the wholesale price and that's your retail rate. Well, that doesn't always work. Again, it depends on your market. tech prices continue to drive down while tech specs continue to drive up. Some phones now are as powerful as some laptops were just a few years ago. Profit margins are thinner in more competitive markets. Plus, as an audience gets savvy and more knowledgeable, pricing often comes down as well. So let's look at another consideration, one that I believe serves creative entrepreneurs much better. It's called return on resources, ROR. When I say resources, I mean everything you're investing in an offering. Time, energy, money, effort, attention, and opportunity costs. Opportunity costs are the cost of giving up one thing in order to pursue another. If you put your resources into creating one offer, you don't have those resources to use for something else, which means you're losing out on the revenue that something else could have created for you. So it's important enough, we're going to go deeper on it in a future episode, this whole idea of opportunity cost. Right now, though, let's focus on ROR as a bigger picture and take a look at everything that you're pouring into an offer and look at where your break-even point is. That's going to start to point you in a direction of more holistic pricing. So let's say, for example, you're investing 30 hours in creating something plus another 30 hours to market and sell it. That's 30 hours of your life you can never get back. What's the price on that? And then how are you delivering this offer? Is it a one-off painting or a sculpture? If so, you can't amortize your creation time costs. They're baked into the hard costs of the creation. If you're creating something that can be sold over and over again, like an e-course or a song or a print, then you can spread that creation time cost across all the units that you make. So when I go into the studio, I make a plan for the number of CDs and downloadable albums I want to sell. I look at the total number of songs I'm recording on the album and the amount of time I'm investing per song. That total cost is divided by the number of album sales to help me determine my break-even point per album. Add to that manufacturing costs for the physical discs and time to upload and market the digital content. And now you start to understand why selling a song for a buck isn't going to make most musicians rich. The good news is that if you're creating repeatable systems, then all that marketing time you've invested can be spread out even farther because you can replicate that system for your next creation. And once you have a marketing system that works, you just keep putting products into it to sell. The more products you can run through the system, the farther you can spread out those marketing costs. Now, research and development can also be a cost. If you're learning something new that can be applied to multiple projects over the years, that's not a hard cost of the offer, but it's still a cost consideration. In fact, many Apple fans point to their R&D work as the reason why Apple's prices are so much higher. Ooh, did you see some pricing mythology creep in there? Did you see that? Yes, Apple does have to invest in research and design. But with a $63 billion profit, I think they're doing okay. So now the picture's starting to come together. We've got the hard costs, we've got the pricing mythology, the return on our resources, and now let me add one more piece to the puzzle here. It's IPA squared. Now, IPA squared stands for two different kinds of activities. IPA 2. These are activities that, as a creative entrepreneur, are the key to your livelihood. They come in two forms: important personal activities and income-producing activities. Simply put, you need time in your life to do the important personal activities that only you can do in order to derive the benefit, like brushing your teeth. Likewise, there are specific income-producing activities that must be done and can only be done by you in order to derive the financial benefit, like maybe having sales conversations or meeting with gallery owners to see if they can get your art installed. You need time to accomplish those activities, which means you'll probably need to charge more in order to free up that time in your calendar. Now, IPA and opportunity costs are so important that we are going to take a closer look at them in a future episode, but they play a part in your pricing too, so it's important that we know what they are. Pricing tells a story. Pricing is also very personal. My goal is to help you find the place in your pricing that feels expansive, not oppressive, to you or your clients. And frankly, that'll be different from one person to the next. I have a colleague who sold a year-long program that was priced so low that I was afraid she wasn't going to be able to pay her bills. I did the math and I could not figure out how she could afford to charge so little. Even with a full program, I couldn't figure out how I could live on what she would be bringing in. And she was doing so much more than I was financially. And then her life circumstances changed. She also opened her eyes to things she was unable to do because her revenue was so low. And then she more than tripled her rates. To an outsider, it may seem like she just jacked her prices to exclude a bunch of people. And I can see where some people would think that. The truth is that her audience shifted. When she focused on serving an audience that could afford to work with her in a way that afforded her the lifestyle that she needed in order to feel expansive and empowered, not oppressive, her business exploded. And look, I get it. There are a lot of heart-centered creative entrepreneurs in the world, and I like to think I'm one of them. But if you think being heart-centered means you have to subsist on a survival-level income or pillage and plunder your clients in order to make a good living, you're wrong. There's a place in the middle. One other method of pricing that's going to feel way more woo and less tangible is the resonant pricing exercise that I learned from Mark Silver over at heartofbusiness.com. I use this process with my clients when they're feeling stuck around pricing a new offer. And there's a direct link to the exercise on Mark's site in the show notes. When you charge more, you can afford to be more generous. Again, that's not a license to extort your audience. You still got to serve them and build those relationships so that they're eager to buy from you and proud to be your raving fan. You'll be able to do less and focus more. You'll have the freedom to do work that really fills you up, which is why most of us chose to become creative entrepreneurs in the first place. You don't want to be struggling every day. You're ready to step into a new level of success that's focused on bringing the best of you to your raving fans and doing your best work for them. Mindset is one of the big pieces we work on in A Club. An accountability club is more than just an online social community. There's one-on-one coaching support, weekly accountability check-ins to help you stay on track with your goals and your dreams. And if you need help figuring that out, we got you covered there too. With our quarterly planning workshops and our archive of training resources, it's one of the best places to go to get your creative business profitable and sustainable fast. Well, faster than trying to do it all on your own, that's for sure. You can learn more about it at lisarobinyoung.com/A Club. The link is in the show notes, or you just visit my website and click on the A Club button. So here's your task for the week. Examine the pricing of your current offers. What's your hourly billable rate for your work? Is it sustainable for you? Are your offers profitable, breaking even, or running at a loss? What changes need to happen to give you the breathing room you need to not just survive, but thrive, because you are worthy of thriving. You deserve to thrive. Then take a look at your business as a whole. Consider where your business fits on the pricing spectrum. Are you more Walmart or more Tiffany right now? Where do you want to be? What needs to change in your business in order to get you there? Do you need to change pricing or maybe drop some offers that no longer fit your brand? Make some decisions and schedule time in your calendar to take action. Remember, if it isn't scheduled, it's stressful. If you liked this episode, help us make a bigger impact in the world. Subscribe to The Rising Tide. Get access to all our bonus resources. Support us on Patreon or simply share us around with your friends and colleagues. We're one of the fastest growing shows for creative entrepreneurs because of the help that you provide in letting the world know that we exist. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And next time, I'm going to walk you through the easiest way that I found to help you nail your niche. I hope you'll join me. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you end the hustle and own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.